Since 1775, generations of Americans have fought for our ideals and our principles. American warriors secured the freedoms to create the United States of America. They fought to end slavery. They joined with allies to win two world wars. They have responded with valor and honor whenever called. And they have liberated more people around the globe than any military in the history of the world. Our all-volunteer forces of guardsmen, soldiers, sailors, marines, airmen, and reservists continue the mission begun at Lexington and Concord. Less than 1% of Americans serve in our armed forces. The least the rest of us can do is to pay attention and get engaged. This program is produced and broadcast for that purpose. It is presented live and worldwide at 1041kqth.com. To engage, call 520-751-1041. The American Warrior is on the air.
Welcome to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Approximately 44.7 million Americans have served our nation in times of war or conflict. Of those, nearly 45 million, about 0.008%, have distinguished themselves in such an extraordinary fashion that they were selected to receive our nation's highest award for valor in action against an enemy force, the Medal of Honor. The best data available shows there are only 73 living recipients of the Medal of Honor. Of the 471 service members awarded the Medal of Honor during World War II, only four remain living with us today. One of them, our guest today, is the sole surviving Marine from World War II to wear the Medal of Honor. It gives me great pleasure to welcome to American Warrior Radio, Mr. Herschel Woody Williams. Woody, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Thank you, Ben. It's good to be with you.
I tell you, Woody, what a joy. I've been doing this show for 5 years. You're my first Medal of Honor recipient to ever appear on American Warrior Radio.
Wow. Oh, that puts me in the top class.
Marines lead the way, right? Or something
yeah,
like that.
Absolutely.
Woody, tell us, I want to spend some time today talking about the action for which you received the award and definitely a lot about what you're still doing today to go out and educate, particularly the young people of our nation. But let's begin at the start. You were raised on a dairy farm in Quiet Dell, West Virginia. You had no desire, no interest in the military at the time, but Pearl Harbor was bombed, and your school teacher had a pretty strong opinion about what your duty should be.
Well, that's true, but I'd been out of school for a while, and you're correct. I was born and raised on a dairy farm, long ways from a city. We were in a community pretty much by ourselves. It was about 7 miles from our house to the nearest town. Fairmont, West Virginia, we called our hometown. Quiet Dell was just a community, certainly unincorporated, and we didn't even have a church in the community.
Wow.
One little grocery store that, of course, there was no air conditioning and no refrigeration, so they couldn't sell anything but dry goods, so to speak, canned goods and dry goods. And it was about 2 miles from my house, and we seldom ever went there. Occasionally, we would have to get something canned or something that we couldn't make ourselves. But on the farm, we raised about everything that we consumed. Butter, cheese, vegetables of all nature. And my mother canned great numbers of canned goods during the winter. During the summer, so we would have it for the winter. So it was a close-knit community. About the only occupation was either farming or we had a few guys, men, who worked in coal mines.
Mm-hmm.
The coal mines were quite a ways away from where we were, so most of them didn't have automobiles that they could travel. To go to the coal mines.
Woody, my father was raised on a farm in South Dakota, very similar. The nearest town was a place called Emory, and I joked that the population was 50 people, but only on a Sunday when the farmers came in to do their shopping. Because it's important, Woody, to what you're doing now, tell us about that teacher and what she would tell you and your classmates about love for country.
Yeah. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know how we would classify that, but I had the same teacher from grade 1 to grade 8. And, of course, we had the normal grades, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. When you graduated 8, if you finished school, Well, then the only other course was high school, but most of us couldn't go to high school because we were too far from the high school, didn't have transportation. There were no bus services or anything like that. So if the family didn't have some way of getting you there, or you didn't go on your own, most of us just got through high school and quit. Mm-hmm. That was the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Naomi Morgan was her name, and she was one of the most patriotic people that I've ever known. Had a tremendous influence on my life because she was certainly a true American and loved America deeply. So she taught us things about America and about the flag, and she made us very proud that we were Americans, that we were free. And in those days, they could do that without any... They were on their own, pretty
mm-hmm.
much.
Mm-hmm.
So she had more impact on my life as to how I felt about my country than my folks did.
Now, Woody, I find it really interesting in preparing for today's show. I saw some interviews you did where, you know, you mentioned you didn't know anything about the military. You weren't interested. Obviously, after Pearl Harbor occurred, a lot of Americans had to change their minds or saw a change in the winds coming. But you thought that, as I understand it, Woody, you thought your role, if you joined the military, was pretty much to stay in Virginia or maybe to go to one of the coasts and just kind of dare the bad guys to cross the line. You had no idea that this might involve going to some rock in the Pacific Ocean.
You're absolutely right. My brother next to me, my next oldest brother, I was the last of the family. There were 11 in the family, 11 born to the family. Only five of us survived into adulthood. But my brother next to me went into what was known as the Civilian Conservation Corps, mm-hmm. called the Three C's. And you would go for a year's contract, and of course you'd earn about $21 a month being in the CCs, and naturally they furnished all the food and the uniforms, but you worked every day at some form of work, usually community service or building roads or building parks or whatever. So I thought when I reached 16, you could go in at 16. That's what I was going to do and did. So they sent me all the way to a place called Whitehall, Montana.
Oh, boy.
I thought I'd never get back home. I'm so far, I'll never find it again. But they sent a great group of us out there. They were individuals, Kentucky, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, Maryland. There were about 265 of us. And our job was to cut posts, build roads, and build fence around government-owned property.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was when Pearl Harbor was bombed. I was 17 at that time. And they called us all out into a formation on the 8th of December and told us that America was at war and that Americans had been killed and they were going to discontinue the Civilian Conservation Corps because now we're in war.
Mm-hmm.
And they offered us the opportunity if we wanted to go directly into the Army from the Civilian Conservation Corps, we could if we were over 18. If we were under 18, we couldn't do it unless our parents said okay. I didn't want to be an Army guy. I had two brothers that had already been drafted into the Army before I joined the Civilian Conservation Corps. And I did not like the looks of that uniform. It looked like it was terrible.
Well, you know, Woody, I know you and I are both old enough to know that you can't believe everything you see on the Internet, but my understanding is when you first went down to sign up for the Marines, they didn't want you. And I can't help but think somewhere down the line after you were awarded the Medal of Honor, if there was some recruiter somewhere saying, dang, I messed that one up.
We can't blame the recruiters because...
Okay.
The Marine Corps, keep in mind, during the Depression years, the only enlistment period they had was 6 years. So when you enlisted into the Marine Corps, you were going to be gone for 6 years. So they were having difficulty convincing people you ought to come into the Marine Corps for 6 years. So they dressed everybody in their dress blues. Everybody had to wear dress blues. And they wanted them uniform in height as near as they could get it, because you just look better. If everybody is basically the same height, mm-hmm. you can certainly, you don't have to build or make a variety of uniforms and shoes and all that stuff. So they would require them to wear their uniform anytime they were off the Marine base. And that's what enticed me, really, because we had a couple fellows not related, and at different times of the year, they would come home for 30 days. And they called it a 30-day furlough. That was the only time you got to come home for a year. Every year, you get your 30 days. Well, they would come home for that 30 days, and they had to wear their dress blues. So they were always very neat and polite, and they looked good.
Well, I'm
better than the Army uniform, so I thought, well, if I'm going to go in, that's what I want to wear, is that blue uniform.
Well, I tell you, Woody, we got to take our first break, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about your the West Virginia Farm Boys Road to Enlightenment via the U.S. Marine Corps. Stick around, folks. It's your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're joined live by Medal of Honor recipient Herschel Woody Williams. We'll be right back.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're very, very honored to have a guest today who is one of only four surviving or living Medal of Honor recipients from the Second World War. His name is Herschel Woody Williams. He's the only Marine left who received the Medal of Honor for his combat, his role in the combat in the Pacific. Woody, coming back, before we took the break, we're talking about sort of your roundabout way into the Marines. If you don't mind, let's talk about the action. After you enlisted and were trained and were shipped off, you saw combat in the Pacific at Guadalcanal, Guam, and Iwo Jima. Is that correct?
No, not quite.
Okay.
Guadalcanal was hit in 1942. I didn't go in until 1943.
Okay.
When I got overseas, Guadalcanal was already secure, and they were using it as training base and supply gathering place. So I landed on Guadalcanal in preparation to go to Bougainville, because the 3rd Marine Division at that time had come from New Zealand to take Bougainville, and when they finished that battle, they moved to Guadalcanal, and that's where I joined them. But there was no fighting going on Guadalcanal when I got there.
Okay, but you were specifically trained in demolition and flamethrower, correct? That was your specialty?
Yes, after I got to Guadalcanal, originally that wasn't true because we had never heard of the flamethrower.
Mm-hmm.
In my training in the United States, flamethrower never came into existence, and when we got overseas, then they began sending flamethrowers over, and we had to then learn how to use one of those. And one of the purposes or reasons that they developed the flamethrower was because of caves. The Japanese would use caves to get into their protective areas. They would do pillboxes. And artillery and mortars and that sort of thing, well, you're very lucky if you hit a cave hole. And they had no effect on pillboxes because they were built out of reinforced concrete. So they came up with the flamethrower because if you can get flame in a hole, in a cave, you're going to kill all the people simply by extracting all the oxygen, if nothing else.
Now, Woody, I'm a country boy myself, so I'm trying to picture in my mind's eye. I see you at a training camp, you know, dairy farmer kid from West Virginia, and a gunnery sergeant walks up to you and says, you know, Woody, we're going to strap this thing on your back that is highly explosive, and if a bullet hits it, you'll be incinerated. Let's go. And Woody was like, hoorah, yeah or no?
No.
Okay.
There is a lot of misconception about the possibility of a flamethrower exploding. And we did have that concern, might have even been fear. But the gunnery sergeant I had, before we got into actually training how to use these things, and nobody had written any instructions of how you'd use it. So before we got into that, we mixed up the material that they had sent with the flamethrower. We set it out in the field, and we shot at it. We tried to make that thing explode. I mean, it never could.
Wow, okay.
Never could. So far as I know, I've never heard of one exploding on somebody's back. The hose that ran from the flamethrower to the gun where the fuel came out, that hose could be shot in too, because it was rubber with a spring inside of it so it wouldn't kink or curl. But it didn't catch on fire if a bullet hit it the right way, but it wouldn't explode.
Okay. Woody, with your permission, sir, I'd like to go ahead and read this citation.
Sure.
For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty as demolition sergeant serving with the 21st Marines, 3rd Marine Division, in action against enemy Japanese forces on Iwo Jima Volcano Islands, 23 February 1945. Quick to volunteer his services when our tanks were maneuvering vainly to open a lane for the infantry through the network of reinforced concrete pillboxes, buried mines, and black volcanic sands, Corporal Williams daringly went forward alone to attempt the reduction of devastating machine gun fire from the unyielding positions. Covered only by 4 riflemen, he fought desperately for 4 hours under terrific enemy small arms fire and repeatedly returned to his own lines to prepare demolition charges and obtain service flamethrowers, struggling back frequently to the rear of hostile emplacements to wipe out one position after another. On one occasion, he daringly mounted a pillbox to insert the nozzle of his flamethrower through the air vent, killing the occupants and silencing the gun. On another, he grimly charged enemy riflemen who attempted to stop him with bayonets and destroyed them with a burst of flame from his weapon. His unyielding determination and extraordinary heroism in the face of ruthless enemy resistance were directly instrumental in neutralizing one of the most fanatically defended Japanese strong points encountered by his regiment and aided vitally in enabling his company to reach his objective. Corporal Williams' aggressive fighting spirit and valiant devotion to duty throughout this fiercely contested action sustain and enhance the highest traditions of the U.S. Naval Service. Wow. Woody, I'm sure that's not the first time you've heard that.
No, it isn't, but let me mention that until the day that I received the Medal of Honor on the White House lawn, October 5, 1945, I had never heard any of those words. I didn't even know they existed. I didn't know how it came about that I was the recipient of the Medal of Honor that I had never even heard tell of. I didn't know such a thing existed. And when that was read, and of course it was read before the president pinned the medal on us, when it was read, one of the words that hit me and has always bothered me is he went forward alone. Had they come to me and said, "Do you agree with the wording in this?" I would have said, "You must take out that word alone."
Yeah, that jumped out at me as well, Woody, when I read the citation.
Yeah, I had help. I had, in fact, 2 Marines who were protecting me that day, trying to keep the Japanese from being able to shoot at me, lost their lives. They sacrificed their lives that day. So I certainly was not alone in that respect of other Marines protecting me. And I was not alone because there was some divine intervention in this thing that kept me alive. And the question has always been in my mind, why me?
Mm-hmm.
Why did I survive and they didn't?
Let's talk about that a little bit, because one of the things I see very often with both veterans that I know personally and interact with, and also some of the guests we've had on the show, is this survivor's guilt.
Yes.
And the why did I get out and my buddy didn't. What thoughts can you share on that from your personal experiences?
Well, it has absolutely bothered me, and when I learned after the campaign that those 2 Marines had been killed that day, I didn't even know who they were. Because by the 23rd of February, having been on the island fighting for 5 days, the Marines had been there that long. I'd only been there 4 days. But having those Marines there and having them sacrifice their life, and I didn't even know who they were, it really affected, it affected me. And it wasn't until last October, when we were in California, San Diego, at the Marine Corps recruit depot, that I learned who those individuals were by the research of other people. They had gone through the military records, and the records indicate that only two people in my particular unit, in that particular zone, lost their lives that day. So on an assumption, that had to be those two individuals.
What are you, we're going to have to take another break here when we come back. If you don't mind, people don't need to hear all the gory details, but you know what? They do. They need to understand the sacrifices that our men and women make to keep us free. So when we come back, I want to continue this conversation. Folks, is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Our guest is Herschel Woody Williams. He was awarded the Medal of Honor for his actions on Iwo Jima during World War II in the Pacific. You can find out more, visit hwwmohf.org. That's Woody's foundation. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're very, very honored and proud and frankly excited to be joined by our guest today. Mr. Herschel Woody Williams was the recipient, or was the awarded the Medal of Honor for his actions on Iwo Jima in the Pacific during World War II. Woody, we read the citation to our listeners before we took our last break. Just so people can, you know, people need to get a real sense of this, and I don't think, you know, we're a family show. We don't need to get into the real gory details, but 22,000, I think, Japanese on that island, only 216 taken prisoner. When you and your fellow Marines landed going in, from your experience on the other islands, did you know that this was pretty much going to be a fight to the death?
No, it was actually just the opposite.
Okay.
Because we had taken Guam back from the Japanese in July and August of the previous year, in 44. And when we were on ship, they told us what the name of the place was we were going. They had a little diagram or a board that showed the shape of it and told us it was only 2.5 miles wide and 5 miles long, and that we'd be gone 2 or 3 days. We probably would never get off ship because 40,000 other Marines who are going to hit first were reserve. They probably would never even use us. So we had no intelligence about that island at all. We didn't know that they had the 22,000 soldiers there or the 14 or 16 or 18 miles of underground tunnels. We didn't know that. The pillboxes, they were mostly camouflaged and covered with sand, so we didn't know how many pillboxes were actually there. According to history, at least the information I've received, said there were 800 pillboxes on that little island. Mm. And when we crossed the first airfield, and we lost a tremendous number of Marines getting across the first airfield because that was one of their primary protective targets. And they had all kinds of weapons set up to protect that place. And at the far end of it, or the far side of it, is where we ran into all of these pillboxes very close together, reinforced concrete, real thick, and artillery and bazookas and that sort of thing. Why, it didn't make a bit of difference to them. You just bounce off or explode and do nothing. And we lost a tremendous number of Marines trying to break through that line of pillboxes, and that's what stopped us. That's where I came into play, because my commanding officer had lost most of his officers. He only had two officers left, and most of the squad leaders and gunnery sergeants were already gone, because they're the people out front. They're the first people going forward. And so we had reached that point, I think, of desperation I had six flamethrower demolition guys under me when I got to the beach. And by the 23rd, the same day the flag went up, mm-hmm. those guys were gone. They were either wounded or killed, and I didn't have anybody left. I'm it. So that's why the commanding officer asked me if I thought I could do something with a flamethrower. I'm the only guy that's trained in that field, left in my company. So, naturally, that's my job. That's what they trained me to do, and that...
What happened? I'm guessing that's one of those things where, you know, you're having this conversation, you know what you have to do, you know that you're the guy to do it, but in retrospect, that's not, you don't want to think too much about that, right? That decision. You pretty much just go out and do your job.
Exactly right. Now, exactly right. You don't question, hey, I don't want to go out there, I could get killed. Yeah. You don't do that.
Now, you took out seven bunkers using six different flamethrowers. I don't know that much about the technology, but I think I read somewhere, if you just loaded up and just held the trigger down, you've only got about how many seconds of ammunition, if you will, of fuel?
72 seconds.
Okay, so you had to be pretty judicious about how you were using this
absolutely.
Weapon.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you were trying to be conservative so you could get as many shots out of it as you possibly could. A 3 to a 5 second shot will do as much as a 15 second shot if you get on target.
Now, you know, it mentioned the one occasion where you worked your way around the bunker, got up on top of it, and found the air vent that you fired down through. In general, though, how close did you have to get to these enemy pillboxes to be effective with a flamethrower?
Somewhere around 20 to 25 yards would be max. You'd have to get that close. And then the flame, if you actually shot it on a body height, it just wouldn't go very far because the air resistance would keep it from moving forward. It runs out of power, so to speak. So we would shoot it 15 or so yards in front of us, 3 or 4 second bursts, and it turned into a great big burning ball. And it would roll then. The force of the air that forced it out would give it enough power that it could continue to roll for about another 15 yards and before it extinguished itself.
Well, I tell you, and for our listeners who don't read history, Iwo Jima, of course, is the famous island where the flag was raised on Mount Suribachi. I'm guessing, Woody, you were too busy to have paid much attention to that.
Yeah, I didn't know it was going on until after it was up. And then I only knew or found out when the other Marines around me, some of them had seen it flying. So they, you know, they began celebrating because Old Glory's flying on Mount Suribachi. And they're firing the weapons into the air and going kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I look up, and there it is, that 4x6 flag flying up there. And it was standing straight out. The wind was... But sending that thing, it was really strong on top of Suribachi, the wind was, and I started doing the same thing that everybody else did, you know, fire your weapon into the air and celebrate here a little bit.
Well, Woody, I tell you what, when I read your citation, I still get a lump in my throat, and I never served, but I don't know what it is about you rural farm boys. I mean, Alvin York, you know, Tennessee, Audie Murphy, Texas, and now, you know, good old Woody from West Virginia. Woody, when you, the presentation, President Truman presented you with the Medal of Honor, as I understand there are 13 recipients in that ceremony. He said that he would rather have the Medal of Honor than be president, but I want to talk about the next meeting that you had, which is a commandant, with the commandant of the Marine Corps. He said something to you that stuck with you for the rest of your life. Tell us what that message was.
Well, much of what he said that day I do not remember because I was half scared to death. I never dreamed I'd even be close to commandant of the Marine Corps. But one of the things he said that I certainly impacted me was that medal does not belong to you.
Mm-hmm.
It belongs to all those Marines who never got to come home. And don't ever do anything that would tarnish that medal.
Powerful, powerful words, sir.
Absolutely. And I have kept it shined ever since I had it not for what I did, but I keep it shined for them. It belongs to them. I'm just the caretaker of it.
What do you, the entire purpose of American Warrior Radio is to educate and inform those who never served by telling stories like yours. You'll be 95 years old this October, as I understand it. Happy early birthday.
That's right.
But after you got, I mean, your life since that moment and the rest of your time in the Marines and then your civilian career has been of one of service to other veterans and their families. Folks may not get this through our conversation, but you were just literally a shy country boy, and then this Medal of Honor happened, and that changed your life and how you had to live your life.
Completely. I really did take on an altogether different life than I anticipated coming back to. As far as I knew, while I was in the Marine Corps, I'm going to back to the farm when I get out of here, and I'll be a farmer of some kind. And I didn't know anything else. I didn't have any other skills that would get me someplace because I was just a grade school graduate with 1 year high school. And I quit after the first year because trying to get to school from 7 miles out, there was just no way that I could do it. And sometimes when the school was over in the afternoon, I would walk those 7 miles home. That's the only way that you want to get home. So it was just not a convenient situation.
Woody, when we come back, I want to talk more about those messages you're spreading in our communities and to our young people. Folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Medal of Honor recipient Woody Williams. Stick around. We'll be right back.
My daddy served in the Army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free.
If you want to discuss those who serve the red, white, and blue, dial 520-751-1041. Now, back to the American Warrior.
And we lit up your world.
Welcome back, folks. As your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined. What a great, great, great time talking to a Medal of Honor winner, our first Medal of Honor winner to ever appear on American Warrior Radio. Woody Williams, want to talk a little bit more about, because I tell you, I mentioned before the break, your life has been one of service. And through your foundation, the Herschel Woody Williams Medal of Honor Foundation, you guys go out and do a lot of good things in our communities and for our young people. Let me just start off by asking you, you've earned the greatest honor that can be bestowed upon a warrior for defending our principles of liberty and freedom. What messages specific to the importance of that do you share with civilians or perhaps other warriors as you're out there, you know, the folks that are still manning the ramparts today?
Well, the only thing that comes to my mind is that circumstances very often govern our lives, and it was a circumstance, a war, that put me in a position that I could in some way give back to my country and to the American people, particularly those individuals who sacrificed a loved one in the armed forces of our country to keep us free. Mm-hmm. to recognize and honor those people who have never received really any recognition for that tremendous sacrifice that they made more than any of us who are still here. They lost one of their own just so we could be who we are and do what we do in a free country.
Woody, as you're out talking to young people, I don't know about you, but at my age, I get sometimes a little bit discouraged about our nation. But I'm guessing when you're out there talking to young people, you also see some glimmers of hope about this next generation who's going to bear the responsibility of preserving freedom and liberty and the light that still shines throughout the world.
I am encouraged. I really am. And what we see in our news media and that sort is is all the bad things. We very seldom ever have any person telling us the great things that are happening in America. And I wish I had control of the news media so that I could say, let's talk about the good of America, not the bad of America. Let's give people hope, because without hope, we're a lost cause.
Agreed. And I tell you, my producer's probably going to roll his eyes because I say this almost every other show. I was raised overseas. I know how special we have things here in the U.S. You know, good times and bad. And if it was up to me, every young person would have to go overseas for a couple of years just to get an appreciation of what people like you and as you mentioned, the people who gave the ultimate sacrifice have earned for them.
Oh, it would be great. I just finished this past Wednesday night attending what is known as the American Legion Boys State, and every state mm-hmm. does this, every state. There were 397 young boys, senior high school students, at this function, and they are the smartest and the brightest, and eventually going to be the leaders of this country. And I see those individuals who are devoting their life to improving their life, and it certainly does give me hope. That's the good part of America.
Well, Woody, I tell you, both my brothers were selected to attend Boys State. I was an alternate. I was going to say I thought it was because I was short, but you are the wrong guy to bring height up with. I'm guessing so. What do you, again, you're about to be 95 years old. You just keep going. You just keep going. Your foundation, I mentioned folks can find out more, the Herschel Woody Williams Medal of Honor Foundation. The address is hwwmohf.org. One of the things you've dedicated your life to is making sure that our Gold Star families, those who lost someone, are not forgotten. Tell us about some of the stuff you've been doing in that area.
Well, I've really been traveling the last couple of years, around 200, 220 days a year. I'm going someplace. And the communities of our country, once they realize that these individuals living among them sacrificed a loved one, they get busy, leaders take over, and they construct a Gold Star family memorial to recognize and remember those families, all relatives. Any relative of an individual who gives his life in the armed forces, they are Gold Star family members. And the communities are doing it. All we're doing is furnishing the information and the leads mm-hmm. to get them started. So we'll be dedicating the 36th this weekend, somewhere in the country, from California, New York, Florida, Georgia, Texas, Oklahoma. West Virginia has five. We have five in our state, more than anybody else at this point. And there will be certainly at least one in every state before we finish, and many states will have, like Texas, they'll probably have 10 or 12 or 14.
Well, one of the other things that I found interesting, Woody, sorry to cut you off, I want to get some stuff in here before we run out of time, your Medal of Honor Wall of Memory, tell our folks about that, because that's also a very special initiative.
It really is. Most states do not have a central location where all of their Medal of Honor recipients are listed with any information about them. So I came up with the idea, why can't we put those in Veterans Administration medical centers where veterans go and families go and honor those individuals from their community, the area they serve, who received the Medal of Honor. Most people don't even know they exist. So the medical centers in West Virginia have agreed to do that. Now we're spreading out. I was in Cleveland 2 weeks ago, Cleveland, Ohio. They're doing one of the walls there. Other medical centers will pick it up as we go along. And it recognizes those Medal of Honor recipients so that people will know who they are and what they did to do to receive the Medal of Honor. And it's just a wonderful thing. Veterans see that wall, and it says Medal of Honor Wall of Memory, mm-hmm. and it has everything about that individual, his service, and how he received the Medal of Honor, and a photograph, if we can get it. A little tough for Civil War, but...
yeah.
But we put their photograph up there, and people recognize them for the first time. They'll say, well, I didn't know he had the Medal of Honor. It's just amazing.
Well, and never forgotten is one of my favorite phrases. People shouldn't forget, and they should read their history. I know I'm preaching to the choir here, Woody, but we've got about a minute and a half left. Folks can find out about those initiatives if they want to get involved, help get a memorial in their town, or even, you know, your character development programs, other things that you do. They can visit the Herschel Woody Williams Medal of Honor Foundation. That address, folks, is hwwmohf.org. Woody, we got about a minute. What last messages do you feel or what messages do you feel our listeners need to hear?
Well, somehow, Ben, I don't know the answer to the question or to the problem, but somehow we have got to restore history, civic classes to our young people in middle and high school. That's where they're going to learn it if they're going to. We here in civil life never have an opportunity of gaining or gathering all those people together at one time so we can educate them. We must rely on our school system to do that. And as far as I'm concerned, unless we put it back in the schools where the teachers can teach it as we were taught when we grew up, we'll never be able to get people to think of America again like those in the past have thought of her.
Woody, very, very powerful words. Thank you so much for your service to our country and for joining us here on American Warrior Radio. Until next time, folks, all policies and procedures are to remain in place.